Our guest today is solving one of the biggest problems in the industry. Now, when people do a new fit out, they often just throw out old furniture. But how many people are actually thinking about what this carbon impact could be? Well, today we're meeting with Clayton, who has created FFN3 to solve this exact problem. Clayton, thank you so much for joining us today on the podcast. Now, we have Clayton here, who is from FFN3 and is a leading organization in the circular economy. So, Clayton, would you like to introduce yourself and a little bit about FFN3?
Hi, Clayton Bristow. FFN3 is a circular economy consultancy, and we're focused on keeping products and materials out of landfill become available as a result of refurbishments or end of leases.
Yeah, absolutely. So, Clayton, tell us a little bit about your background and how this whole entire thing came about.
Yeah, of course. I actually started off in the industry pretty early. I was 16 years old, and I started out working for Scavello, who are, of course, one of Australia's largest commercial furniture manufacturers. And after sort of a 12-year stint working at Scavello and getting to know the industry, I jumped ship into corporate real estate at the Commonwealth Bank, so working there within the corporate real estate team. So went from seeing the contractor side through to the client side, and working on projects to deliver CBAs, you know, business banking sites, as well as some minor works. And then my sort of final project there was the head office at Darling Quarter, which is 60,000 square metres across two 30,000 square metre assets. So yes, that's been the journey so far.
Yeah, and so you have seen the full cycle there as well, and you've seen it from all endpoints and understanding what the client or the end user is looking for, as well as actually, you know, what it goes into in either building or construction, even furniture itself, and doing that. So where did this entire idea come from?
Yeah, good question. So in 2019, we're kicking off the strategy for the head office refurbishment of the Commonwealth Bank. And we asked ourselves the question, what's going to make this the most sustainable project that we will ever deliver? It was quite a long two buildings and about a 5-year horizon. We wanted to make sure that when the project was completed in 23-24, that it was still one of the bank's most sustainable projects ever delivered. And we turned our attention to reduction in carbon emissions, monitoring, tracking and managing carbon emissions, which was quite an early, before its time. Yep. And really, because we were repurposing to existing assets, we had this unique opportunity to decant one building at a time and to reuse as much of the existing fit out as possible. And that was our pathway to reduce carbon emissions. The idea for the business and where it all came from was the sort of eureka moment, or more sort of aha moment, when we were asked to decant one of the buildings. We just said, well, what happens to all the furniture? Where's all this going to go? And the answer came back is it's most likely going to end up in landfill. There'll be some level of recycling, but for the greater part, most of it was going to go to landfill. So then we said, well, what else can we do? We started to work with schools, charities, secondhand dealers and the likes when we were trying to have a garage sale. This was the first building. And then we started to develop better networks to then rehome the majority of those products and materials, but also reusing them as well.
And it is. I mean, it's sort of, I suppose, a symbol of our 21st century wastage, isn't it? Like, I'll give you an example. The other day, my parents were trying to sell some, you know, they moved and they were trying to sell some antique furniture. And, you know, you think about that furniture is solidly made. It was there for hundreds of years. This is only even in private sites. We've gone from doing that to everybody just buys a piece of IKEA furniture or thinks about something like that being it. Now, amount of waste that we're producing, let alone when we're doing an office, you know, the furniture is generally for a workspace is some of the most expensive that you're going to be spending on it. So it is amazing how it's something so simple and there is a solution that is needed. It's obviously why you guys are quite successful in what you're doing, but in essence, it is, I mean, the built industry is, I think I was talking to another sustainable consultant on this, essentially I think it's like 40% of wastage or carbon is coming from our industry, and we just don't even think about it from the furniture side. And you think, you know, I'm sitting on a stool right now or sitting on a desk and I go, is this only going to last for 5 years? Is that, yes, we understand that from writing something off as on a balance sheet, but is that really what we're thinking about when we're producing all of this new stuff that we just have one use and that's it?
Yeah, the waste is largely invisible. So, you know, you think about me as a tenant of Commonwealth Bank, I go into any other tenant, of course. I take a new lease, I fulfill the lease, I then move on to the next building in 10, 15 years' time, and I move into the new building, and you don't quite see what happens because there's a make-good process, the landlord will take on the obligations, and it's, you know, and you pay for the service to as part of the make-good to deal with those products and materials, and when the demolition occurs, that is also quite invisible. So what a lot of people don't realise is mixed recycling means that a whole bunch of materials go across a conveyor belt, and typically the results are that, you know, 70% can be recycled and 30% goes to landfill. So it doesn't actually sound too bad. But when it comes to furniture, particularly upholstered items, it's almost always the upholstered items that go off in that 30% into the landfill space because you can't extract the textiles from the foams and the non-recyclable elements from the recyclable elements. So furniture in particular is quite a contributor to landfill. I think in a scale, it's food first, fashion next, and then furniture or fashion and furniture apart. Those three S are our largest contributors to landfill, largely because it's so easy and it's so cost effective. One of the concerns about importing, you know, furniture, when I started out in the furniture industry, you know, a workstation would cost around $2,000 to $2,500 per work point. Now it's $1,000 or sub $1,000, and this is 26 years later. The cost of managing waste is compared to the cost of imports now. So as the cost of, you know, cheap imports come in, the I'm sure it'll come up in the conversation here, the cost around labor and logistics to manage that waste properly, you know, people just seek out the most cost-effective solution, which is landfill.
Oh, it's kind of like, oh, we're focused on the new shiny thing that we've got. We're not going to be worrying about what's the destruction that we've left behind. I think we all do it, even in our own personal ways. It's like, oh, I look at every single, I've got these small bins I've got to take out of the bin all the time, and I'm just so conscious of how much waste I'm producing every day. And, you know, had kids with nappies, and I'm just like, my entire footprint is ridiculous. And then when you have kids, you're like, I'm just doubling this. You know, how am I? I'm not actually helping the planet right now. I'm actually doing it a disservice. But I think that's one of the things that we don't think about. We talk about workspaces, we talk about all these great things, but we're not actually thinking about it needs to be in that consideration. And, you know, these days, obviously, we're talking more and more about ESG. Which is what you are as an ESG consultant. We'll talk about the consulting side. But it's actually about we all have to be responsible and think about not just looking ahead, but looking behind of the destruction or the impact that we've actually left. And, you know, we don't all just occupy this, you know, 6 foot, you know, if we think about we go in the ground, we actually just leave. I don't know the stats. It's probably one of the things we should have for War on Waste and things like that. But the stats of what we're leaving as a person, but let alone as a company, when you're, you know, having workspace and things for great, well, actually, how many tons of rubbish are you actually leaving behind for every single move that you make? As well,
yeah, it's significant. And there's a statistic and a report I can send you after this. But what people, you know, at that invisible part of fit out waste in particular, we've got a chart that we use in some of our presentations, which shows the iterative refurbishment within a building. If a building lasts for 60 years and the leases turn over every 15 years, then the actual carbon and the wastage of the internal fit outs over the lifetime of the building will far exceed the original base build structure. So it's kind of hidden because it happens incrementally over time, but it is a huge problem. And none of which is designed to go back to manufacture, to, you know, portions of it are recycled, it could be 5% or something like that. But, you know, the idea of circular economy, and we'll probably touch on this in a little bit, but is to get products and materials back to their point of manufacture to offset, to recoup and stop everything going to landfill and becoming waste, and realizing the value of those assets, but also to offset the extraction of raw materials from Mother Earth, you know, because we do realize that we're in a finite environment. And, you know, why not make sure that those products and materials can go back to point of manufacture?
Oh, well, look, and I'm really pleased to see that ESG is, you know, filtering down into big corporates, and hopefully it filters down into everyday thinking. I actually studied economics and did environmental economics, and I always found it very interesting how we seem to judge our economy and our success by GDP and these silly things, I just think, versus what are we actually judging on the impact that we're actually having on the planet, and why are these not things that are included? It's good 20 years later that we're starting to see these things come in incorporated, and, you know, as we did an earlier podcast episode around the sort of financials and the investment actually filtering down into these, you know, ESG becoming something that's important. But I think it's something as well that, you know, we're in 2026, and I think the next generation is thinking more like that. You know, I grew up, you know, post school in the sort of the 2000s, and I think back and I go, God, now I really hope that our kids are starting to think in the same way too, and starting to think. Are you noticing that, or are you mainly seeing that this is a push from a compliance and ESG side of things?
It's a voluntary space at this point in time. There's a lot of benefits to it. And the ESG component is largely coming from, you know, large corporates that are either tracking carbon, tracking their waste, but also they have a social impact mandate as well as part of their business. So that's what we're seeing a lot. And then it comes down to individuals, really, you know, who cares about what's going on. But at the moment, we're seeing a lot of the drive come from the sort of the ASX 200 and those big, large organizations who sort of do have that background and understanding of carbon and waste and sort of the broader portfolios. And understand the challenges as well.
And you work with a myriad of different people. So you work with the end user, and we'll talk about that from the consulting point of view. But then you also work with architects and builders and stuff like that. So let's talk about that from the sort of practical before you're just doing the consulting. When do you get involved, and how can they utilize you to be able to present this to a client as well?
Yeah, I'm sure everybody would say the earlier you can get involved with a project is the better, but in our situation, it really is. So you can't analyze what is available to reuse, rehome, and or recycle unless you know what you have. So if you think about a pre-existing tenancy, operational and maintenance manuals and as-built drawings aren't really well documented, or they're well documented, but they're not well kept. So quite often what we're asked to do is come in and actually catalogue what have you got on site. So we've developed an app, because we started out with spreadsheets and that was horrendous. Now it's all in a tablet and at a platform. We run around, six people on a floor, we'll be done within half a day. And all of a sudden we've got all these insights. We've got the volume, we can see where there's, you know, some high value items that are really well maintained. We can see, you know, what products are end of life and need to find their way through to recycling. But it all starts out with that. So we get engaged quite often by the end user directly, but we work with everybody in the project value stream. But a lot of our information that we develop in that audit phase influences the workplace strategy. You know, when there are sustainability targets, furniture, which is one of the reasons we're doing what we're doing, from circular economy, which can be really quite complex, furniture is probably one of the easiest ones to understand. You know, it's designed to move, it's designed to be reused, it can be reupholstered. It's sort of the first cab off the rank to demonstrate how the process can work on scale.
So tell us a little bit about when you get involved, ideally, and, you know, how you can actually help companies to be able to, you know, start, sounds like, with an audit or what their intention is. Talk us through a bit about your process and overview of how you help.
Yep. So the process is quite standard. We've been in operation for nearly 2 years. It starts out with an audit. We'll come on site and we'll catalogue everything that's there. Then we submit that back to project stakeholders and the client as in an architectural style inventory, which is available on a platform that everybody can log into and download. And that just puts everybody on the same page. That inventory includes insights around, you know, what are the high value items, what are the high volume items. A lot of what we like to do with our analytics is have a look at, you know, Pareto's law, 80-20. You're going to get 80% of your value from 20% of the products on site. We always enjoy looking at that when we submit the inventory. From there, we partner with the design team, with the end user, with the builder and project manager, whoever's on board, to develop strategies. So what are your sustainability targets? How can we increase those? Every project we've worked on, through the level of detail and information we provide, the level of reuse and the bar has raised from the baseline, simply because you have information in a digestible format that gives the design team in particular confidence to reuse products. If you're working from a schedule that has Excel spreadsheet with one image and a little thumbnail, and you have to ask an architect to trust you that you can use that product, reuse is probably not going to hit the mark. But what we do is we've got multiple high-definition photos of every single product on site that you can flick through, and that comes through in the inventory. So architects can get a zoom in on the upholstery to see, and they can match that up with their library. There's all kinds of details within that inventory. So with the strategy, reuse, and then once we know what's being reused, there's always a surplus, and we develop solutions on rehoming that and recycling end-of-life products. Rehoming typically involves charities and not-for-profits. So we have a large network of charities and not-for-profits who have registered interest in assets with us. And it could also be small business, or even there's an emerging trend for large institutional corporates who are doing refits, who are actually seeking good quality pre-existing product to reduce their carbon emissions associated with the build of their new offices. So we have this running list of people who are interested or looking for good quality assets, and then working with the in the defit and the refurbishment space to just provide supply.
So you've got
demand.
A marketplace, in essence, where you can buy. Oh, wow, fantastic.
Effectively, yeah. And a lot of it, the products are becoming available at the cost of collection and sometimes a token donation. So, workstations, by the time you pay somebody to take them out of the site where somebody's leaving one as a refurbishment, that cost, which is borne by the recipient, particularly for a corporate who needs it for their new office, or a landlord who needs it for a spec suite, we've done that before as well, you're probably looking at about 10 to 15% of the cost of new. So the recipient saves quite a lot of money. The person who's moving the furniture on saves quite a bit of money. But there's not a lot of residual value in furniture unless it is a high-spec Eames, highly desirable product, in which case there might be money that exchange hands to take that on board.
You know what? When you describe it just makes me think, of course, why hasn't this existed? Like, how has this not existed in this same format? But as you said, because everything's been new, we're sort of driven by this, oh, it's new and it costs as much, then to recycle it. And it's a bit complicated, right? There's a few things to do. So in essence, that's what you do. You've filled this gap and this need.
We call it the white glove service, but it makes the complicated uncomplicated, basically. You just trust us to do it. So we've just completed a project, 12,000 square meters, where we assisted a client. They were started to do it themselves. So they had charities coming to site to pick things and the lights, and they had to go to multiple site visits. They wanted to run a staff auction. We do that quite a bit with our clients, run staff auctions to rehome some of the existing products staff.
With working from home. Yep.
Yeah, yeah. But effectively, we manage the labor and logistics and project manage the site then leave a broom swept so that the client doesn't have to worry about, dealing with secondhand dealers and the transactions and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
We don't sell any product ourselves, and we don't make a commission on sales. It's all the client's assets and the client's money, but we'll manage the process.
You'll facilitate it.
It can be really quite messy. So
when you're doing that from the initial part, you'll come and do an audit and things like that. So if this is a company who was thinking, I need to make a move, or, they can go onto the site, and we'll put this in the show notes as well. And it's great for the designers too to know that something like this exists, especially for smaller workplaces. How do they get in touch with you? What is it that you can help them through from both the circular economy, but the ESG sort of planning and looking at it from that point of view as well?
Reach us to direct. We'll put some, we'll give you some information on how to get in contact with us. That'll be great. LinkedIn or our generic inbox, you'll be able to reach the team. You want to get in, we try and say 3 months before your need to action something. So if it's a design that needs to occur, probably not quite 3 months. We can get in there, you know, 1 or 2 months beforehand before the design team picks up and runs with it. But if it's a end of lease or a strip out, 3 months gives us enough time to come in and catalog the items. Depending on the site, it could be one day, it could be a whole week, it could be 2 weeks. But then the hardest part is to find those solutions, that strategy phase. Where are we going to reuse these products, or where are we going to rehome those products direct from site? We don't want to store any product because it's double handling and somebody's got to pay for that. So it makes reuse and rehoming more expensive. We want to go straight from that site to their new recipients. That's the lengthy
part of the move, really.
Yeah, and we need four to 6 weeks to, and when we meet with a charity or a recipient, we want to understand their needs. We don't just send out an inventory and say, here you go, let us know what you want. There's a consultation process where we understand, okay, you're doing a refurbishment, here's some of the products. The team, Ashley, you know, in particular, and I both have a furniture background, and we can help them understand, okay, you need a 22-person, yeah, they want a 22-person boardroom in this small thing. We're like, actually, that's not going to fit. So we meaningfully place and help the recipients, particularly charities who are so under-resourced, understand what they're saying yes to and making sure that it's fit for purpose. Otherwise, we're just passing on the landfill problem to somebody who's actually not, you know, it doesn't have the means to deal with it if it got to their space and it wasn't right. So it's about meaningful placement. So.
Yeah. And I'm assuming then you work with a lot of landlords and, you know, the JLLs and the others of the world?
Yeah, yeah, 100%. Everybody's, the best part about being in this space is people who we deal with and who engage us want the outcomes. They want to do the right thing by the environment and they also want to help. There's a never-ending supply and there's a never-ending demand. It's all really just about bringing those two together, and that's the hardest part, just meshing those needs and the timing.
I understand
That's the hardest part.
Yeah, but I do recruitment as something that we do, and that is always the hardest thing. It's always about timing half of the time. But as you said, you know, because you're trying to move things around without it going to a massive storage unit, and you've got to then, you know, get it again, if we're looking from the carbon footprint, you know, transporting things across, storing them, doing that transporting and all across. So I can see how it's a time issue, which is why it sounds like it's great that you've kind of also, it's this, the consulting side of it, but also having a bit of a marketplace where people can purchase and pick up those things allows for that overflow and the movement at the right time and stuff like that, which sounds fantastic. And the fact that you're also then, you know, as you said, you're also helping out on the social side by actually helping and donating to schools and to charities, where it means that, you know, they're not having to spend this money that would be dead money to be able to 100%. Do this as well.
100%. Yeah. I mean, a lot of the, as I mentioned earlier, a lot of the actual products are being acquired. For those who are paying for collection from site, they're acquiring those products at about 10% of the cost of new. And, you know, for charities and large organizations, you know, we work with Vinnies and other large organizations that have an operational budget, but they then get to use that budget for their mission. So rather than, you know, spending $2,500 on a desk or a table or something like that, it's cost them, you know, $250 to collect it and move it to their new site, which allows them to focus on their core mission.
Absolutely. And I mean, for those who are actually giving to those organizations as well, you're getting a better return out of than it is just on, but you know, it is one of those elements. So so tell us a little bit, Clayton, what's sort of the future? How do you see it sort of growing? Where do you think you guys can continue to help and facilitate?
Yeah, look, I mean, at the moment, we're based in Sydney. We're doing a lot of work in Melbourne. We've done some work in Brisbane, Perth, and Adelaide as well. But it's all really around scale at the moment. So we've built up a good team. We've got everything up and running with the platform. And that's all just about, expanding into new cities and getting set up.
Well, because you only started 2 years ago and you've already grown.
2 years ago.
That's exceptionally impressive.
Just released some statistics last week for our January LinkedIn post, and it was 306,000 square meters of tenancy space that we've audited over the last 2 years. We've catalogued 15,000 entries, and that represents over 100,000 individual items that we've then, you know, gone on to seek options for.
Yeah, and do you know how much you've saved in carbon?
I don't, unfortunately. So That's actually one of the points. So in you asked me earlier around our process. There's the audit, the inventory, and the strategy. Then we manage the implementation, which is the labor and logistics to get the products to their final destination. Once they're at their destination, we provide a very detailed outcomes report.
Yeah.
So the clients can opt in or opt out of carbon quantification. It is relatively expensive to quantify a large inventory of furniture, but some of them are already on that journey and they're after that information.
Mm.
But you know, for the greater part, our outcomes reports will always include diversion from landfill, products donated and or reused, and a whole bunch of insights as well. It's interesting. We're on the receiving end of so many incredible insights that can inform better design from a circularity perspective, because we observe that you can't recycle MDF. And it pops up in all these incredible places, like worktops that have a shark nose edge on them. That little detail of wanting to have a thinner tabletop will actually trigger the requirement to go to MDF versus particle board, and particle board can be recycled. That to petitions, for instance. MDF is used extensively on door stoppers, and then it becomes a waste product in any form of refurbishment or demolition. Yeah.
So is that something you might have on in the future as a bit of a guide for designers to specify in products that are better and can be recycled?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, we're collecting insights all the time, and whenever we do roadshows or we're involved, particularly at the beginning of the project, as I mentioned, to inform workplace strategy, we'll always throw these nuggets in to say, hey, we've just done 10,000 square meters of strip out, and these were the core problems. PVC, we all know about PVC foams and MDF. They're sort of the main ones. MDF in particular can really impact your landfill diversion because it's so heavy. And
is there any way then, because I suppose you're in a little bit of competition of those who are the manufacturers or the importers, is there a way of also being able to influence the industry, not just on the end users and getting it specified, but actually sort of informing this? Because
100%.
Those furniture companies need to also be responsible, like clothing companies are now being asked to be responsible for not just producing stuff, but thinking about the impact they're having on the planet as well.
Yeah, look, we made a conscious effort to partner with furniture manufacturers and suppliers from the outset. So we've met with them all. They understand what we do. They understand our charging model. We're not in competition. A lot of what we do as well, when we do have product to rehome, if it has a product stewardship agreement, we'll reach out to those manufacturers and say, hey, you've got a product stewardship agreement under a Green Star project that was delivered 7 years ago. Would you like to take that product back? Now, all product stewardships are effectively at the cost of the purchaser to return that product back to point of manufacture. So there is a cost associated with it. We've only had one chair so far that has gone down that path, largely because if you can either return the product to the manufacturer and it'll be recycled, or you can pay the same price to deliver it to a charity. You're going to product to a charity. But it is something that we do, and we want to work with the furniture industry. We do offer those insights as well, what we see at the tail end to the furniture industry. And we sort of did a bit of a roadshow last year and met with over 20 furniture suppliers to share our insights so far. So,
What was the uptake, or what do the furniture companies actually think on that?
Yeah, it's interesting. It's a bit of a mixed response. Some, they're all in a different phase of their circularity journey, I think. Mm-hmm. So some of them were sort of trying to wrap their head around, well, I've got to collect these items and I've got to store them, and if I take them back, and there was sort of a bit of a hesitation. You can understand it's a very complex logistical sort of problem to solve. Others, have already been doing this for a long time. They have refurbishment manufacturing. Storage is always an issue. But one thing that sort of is quite clear is that those who stand to benefit from the trend to a circular economy are those who already develop good quality products that have longevity, that have product, parts that can be replaced. If the leg falls off, you can replace the leg. You don't have to throw the chair away. Those kind of everything's repairable. It can be reupholstered. Some of the leading manufacturers have sort of said, "Well, we've been doing this for a very long time. It's just people haven't asked for it." So there's kind of a mixed response, and everybody is at a different phase of their understanding and acceptance of the circular economy.
Well, and I suppose the problem is those who actually probably do enable all those things you've talked about probably aren't the ones that are coming in at the bottom end of the market. They're the ones who actually do come. And that's, I think, you know, as it being on the user side, having that understanding of, yes, the chair might cost this much, but what we're getting with it is all of this. If something goes wrong, we can do that. And it's good to see that this contemplation is coming in now into companies' minds of what they're thinking about, into property teams.
I mean, we preach to the furniture industry that this is a disruption, and that with disruption comes opportunity. You know, this could be the Uber to taxi scenario, which is if you sit on your laurels, you're going to be the taxi, but there is opportunity here to flourish. You know, you can, Green Star's new fit out tool, which is heavily focused on circularity and reuse, is going to become more prominent. You could offer a reuse, line. It could be your Jetstar to your Qantas. It can complement your existing. You're always going to need new. You're always going to have to phase product out and recycle it. So you always have a steady stream of new product that is required. It's not going to replace the requirement for manufacturing. It's going to complement it.
Yeah, fantastic. That has been exceptionally interesting. Thank you, Clayton, so much for all of your insights. Now, generally we do ask if somebody is interested in this area or if there's a book or something or somebody they should follow or look at. Do you have any suggestions of some things that you would point people in the direction of?
Yes, the author is escaping me right now, but Cradle to Cradle. It's not a long book. I will get those details for you. We get that in, and maybe we can slice that in. But it is effectively, it talks about and describes, in nature, there is no waste. And it talks about a cherry tree as an example. So, you know, surplus overfruiting of a cherry tree becomes nutrients for the roots. And it's just sort of, you know, endless cycle of energy and material. So it's a great book, and it really does sort of set the scene for what the opportunity is when we actually look at things differently.
Absolutely. And I really look forward to the next 20 years where we don't have a choice. We need to be thinking about this in a better way. So thank you. And thank you for creating your company and being able to, I suppose, solve a problem that could be quite complex, and that's why nothing's being done about it, and making it quite simple, filling that gap and actually now saving, you know, hundreds of thousands of products from actually going to landfill that the industry, you know, doesn't have to write off now.
100%. Yeah. Thank you very much for having me. It's been great.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Cool. Thank you.
What a fascinating conversation. I must say, I absolutely admire somebody for having this solution. I really think that it is something that more people should be using. More designers and more builders should be thinking about actually working with these guys to be able to specify or to find cheaper solutions. Imagine if you could actually spend more money on other things than furniture and be doing good for the planet.